this week and hope that you have read through Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through chapter 3, verse 20 several times by now. 8, to be specific, at least. Tell me, anybody remember what chapter 3, verse 21, how it starts out? But now. That's right. But now. And it's a complete change. And we'll see that even more clearly when we get there. If you're going to take a journey, you're going to go somewhere, what's the first thing you have to know? Okay, somebody said, where are you going? How to get there? There's something you got to know before you know that. What's going to cost? Keep going. What you need to take? Keep going back. Why are you going? We're getting closer. A desire to go. How about where you are? Really? You got to know where you go, where you are, before you can figure out how to get where you want to go. Well, really, that's what Romans 1:18 to 3:20 is telling us. It's telling us where we are. Because the truth is, we don't know where we are. We think we know. But we don't know where we are until the Lord tells us where we are. And then he's going to have to prove it to us because we don't believe it. 1:18 to 3:20 tells us where you are. And let me tell you where you are. You're lost. And if you're lost, you can't figure out how to get where you want to go. Now that's the truth. He starts in, we're picking up in 1:18. We mentioned last week that 1:17 is the theme of the book. It talks about a righteousness from God, for in the gospel, a righteousness from God, a righteousness from God, a righteousness from God. And I could say it 20 times, and it still doesn't sink in until we do something to make it sink in. We hear it, but we keep trying to have a righteousness of our own that comes through law. And God wants us to know that there is a righteousness. He talked about his heart's desire and prayer to God, Paul did, for Israel was that they would be saved. And then he talked about why they weren't saved. Because they, being ignorant of the righteousness that comes from God, sought to establish their own righteousness. And they ignored the righteousness that comes from God. And folks, it's really easy to do when you grow up like some of us have grown up. Because we keep trying to establish our own righteousness. I try to think about how to say things so that it'll make sense to you. Make real sense to you. Because these principles that we're talking about will change your whole life. And I know preachers say that kind of stuff all the time. But it really is true. If you'll let it, this will change your whole life. And just so you'll know, it will change it for the better. I know that I have seen over the years that sometimes we as preachers might have a tendency to, I don't know if it's accurate, I don't want to accuse anybody, but overstate our case sometimes and maybe promise things that are not really real. It's kind of, you know, out there somewhere. But this is really, really real. And it translates to everything in your life. Because if you've ever felt the struggle that you want to be good and you want to go to heaven and you want to please God, but you just feel like you're falling short and you just feel like you don't really know if you know how and know exactly what you need to be doing. And you go to sleep and you just kind of try to dismiss it because you've tried. And so we say things like, if you'll just do the best that you can, then God's going to take care of all of it. But if our salvation really does depend on doing the best you can, you know what? You're probably not going to make it. Because how many of us, when we pillow our head at any given evening and go to sleep, can honestly say that there wasn't one more good thing that we could have done? There wasn't one more person we could have talked to about the gospel, or there wasn't one more good deed that we could have done. And so I know what we're saying when we say, you know, you do your best and God will take care of it or whatever. I know what we're saying. But I also know that sometimes hidden behind that, we really do mean that. And you can't do your very best. There may be a moment, there may be a few brief incidences in your life when you're fully stretched out. I mean, there is no more, you're leaving all on the field. There's nothing left. Maybe there's a few times like that. But we don't live our life that way, do we? Giving it our very best. And so if getting to heaven is a matter of goodness, then how good have you got to be? If it's a matter of keeping law, then how well do you have to keep law? And see, all these things are real. Yes, somebody? That's exactly right. That's the standard. And that's what we're going to see is a standard. In chapter 1, we're trying to find out where we are. And chapter 1 is going to tell us how man got lost. There is a series of steps and that man takes in departing from God. They're logical, and they happen that way every time. He's got them outlined here in chapter 1. Whenever you see someone in the process of departing from God, then they're somewhere on this ladder. And they're sequential. They start with one given thing. They take a next step and a next step and a next step and a next step. And they will start with something that seems relatively insignificant, at least from our standpoint, and they will ultimately get to a point where they'll say there is no God. And so that's that sequential departure, and it's outlined here. And when you see those steps and you write those steps down, then you're going to be able, I'm not saying that God made you the judge, but you're going to be able to be a lot more perceptive about things, individuals, communities, and nations, and where we are in regard to God, because there are certain characteristics of each step as we are in the process of departing from God. And then chapter 2, we're going to see, I don't know if it's ever bothered you before. Well, I do know it's bothered some of you. But it bothered me a lot as a young person about how is God going to judge a person who never had a chance to hear the gospel. That ever bother you? It really bothered me. You know, maybe because I was the preacher's kid and, you know, I got exposed to those, you know, things that cause questions more than the average kid. I don't know, but it really, really bothered me. And the answers that I got bothered me more than the questions did, because it just seemed to be totally, absolutely unfair that God was going to open the Bible up and judge people whenever, you know, we preach our sermons that the book of Revelation, the books were open and the great and small stood before God and they were judged. And one of the books that was open was the Bible. And here somebody's going to be judged by a standard that they never heard of. How fair is that? Does that bother you? It bothered me to think about, you know, God's righteous and God's just. Well, how could he judge somebody by a standard that they never knew that they were going to be judged by? They never heard that standard before. That bothers me. And I've come to believe that that's not true. And if you want me to just run to where I'm going so you'll know and you can start seeing if it pieces together for you as we study the Bible and see if the Bible reinforces this. Let me tell you where I'm going. By the time we get to chapter 3, verse 20, it is my belief and my understanding that 118 to 320 will show us that God will take the standard that a man lives by, regardless of when, where he lived, who he is, where he is, whatever his conditions are. He'll take the standard that that man lived by and judge him by that standard. And it's not going to be an unfair judgment. He's going to be judged, and he's going to say, by the time we get to 320, he's going to be convicted of sin about which he will have no excuse. And every mouth will be stopped, and the whole world become guilty before God. That's what he's going to say. Now, if somebody judged me by a standard that I never had heard of before, then I can promise you that I would have some but, wouldn't you? But he said he's going to convict every man of sin of which he is aware, and every mouth will be stopped, and the whole world will come guilty before God. There won't be any buts. There won't be any excuses. We're guilty, and we know we're guilty. That's where we're going with 118 to 320. And it ain't fun. And by the time we get through chapter 3, verse 20, you'll be ready to get out of that section. Because it's not good news. It's bad news. But until you know where you are, you're never going to be able to get where you want to go. And you're just going to wander around until you know absolutely for sure and certain where you are. We've been talking about the prodigal son. We called it that. We've been talking about the prodigal God, and we've been really focusing on the older son. You know what his problem was by now, right? He didn't know where he was. He thought he was somewhere that he wasn't. And Jesus told that story primarily to let the people, his audience, know that they were lost and they didn't know it. That's just a story that illustrates what's going to be taught in the book of Romans. And there's some really good news. There's a feast that the Father invites you to come into. Isn't that interesting how the whole Bible ties together? I'm telling you, when you learn these principles, you're going to see it everywhere in the Bible. You're going to see it everywhere. Because these, as far as I can determine, as far as I believe, there are no more fundamental principles that you'll ever entertain or need to be answered in your life than what we're talking about right now. How is a man lost? Why is a man lost? How do we get righteous? How are we saved? And it's not going to be what I think. We're going to talk about this from the scriptures. And I've said numerous times before, and will say probably numerous more times, there's two ways to be saved. Romans 1:18 through chapter 3, verse 20 talks about one of those ways to be saved. And you need to clearly know that there are two ways you can be saved, and you need to make an educated decision about how you want to stand before God, what you're going to appeal to for your righteousness. And you need to know everything that you can know about that so that you'll know, okay, here's, when I stand before God, this will be my basis for appealing to God. What's it going to be? Is it going to be how good you've been? Well, you know, you say it like that and people say no, but we do practice that sometimes. We have it in our mind, and because we have those kind of things in our mind, we never have any security. And people will get to a point where they'll say, what is the use? I try and I try and I can't do what I promised God I'm going to do. I try to be good. I try to keep that law. I try to not do this and I try to not do that, but I just keep on doing it. And people get discouraged after a while, and some people walk away, sadly, because they don't know that there's an alternative. And other people don't literally walk away. We just come in, and we come in at the last minute, and we sit here and get our ticket punched, and we get out as fast as we can, because it's just something that we're doing because we're uncomfortable if we don't do it. And we're unhappy if we're out there, and we're not very happy if we're in here. Well, that's because you don't have any confidence. If you have security about your salvation, then, you know, the older brother, he had some insecurities, didn't he? And that's why he couldn't be happy about his younger brother. If he had security about himself, really, then he could be happy about his brother. There are lots of people that are critics, and they're angry, and they're hostile in the Lord's church. And it's because they don't have the kind of security that God offers. And they're critical of other people. Paul said, be careful about criticizing one another, biting and devouring one another, because what will ultimately happen? You'll eat one another up. You'll consume one another. Boy, it's a really sweet thing to be in God's family when people are really secure. They're secure enough to reach out and include you and be happy when good things happen in your life and be sad when difficulties come into your life and really, really share your life with one another. Boy, it's a really neat thing to have a family like that. But when you have a family of Pharisees, you can't have that. It can't happen. And we're just critics. And we're third-person people, what they're doing. So, 1:18. He starts out hitting it hard. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Now, let me tell you this. I don't know how long this class is going to go. I've gotten permission for it to go 6 months, but you may get worn out before that time. I don't know, and I might too. I don't know. But I don't know if we're going to go 3 months or 6 months, probably six, knowing me. But I'm not going to hit every single verse. I'm going to pull out the things. We're only going 8 chapters, okay, and 6 months. Well, that's flying for me, okay, because I go real slow. But I'm going to pull out the principles that I think, and in a way that I understand them, and if I ever pull one out of context, I want you to let me know. I'll try to make sure that we get the full context of it. But we're going to walk through this section pretty detailed, at least parts of it here. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Now, whenever we hear the word, the truth, what do we think? What comes to our mind that he's talking about? The gospel, right? God's word. Well, that's not what he's talking about. Let's see if I can show that to you, okay? Because he just made a statement, and Paul's going to do this. He's famous for this. He'll make a statement. It will be, if you want to call it, a premise, and then he's going to spend a lot of time proving his premise. So he's making a real premise statement here, and whenever you hear it, you nod your head because it seems to be a self-evident truth, but it's a lot deeper than you think. And so he says God's wrath is going to be revealed on certain people. And by the way, that's going to be the topic all the way to 3:20. We're not going to start talking about salvation and how a person gets saved till we get to 3:21. But now righteousness from God is made known, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, 3:21 says. Up to that point, we're going to be talking about how man tries to be righteous by keeping law. Two ways to be saved. One is keep law. And the other is going to be, we'll find out when we get there. But he says, he starts out, God's wrath is going to be revealed against certain people. And that's going to be the theme that's going to go all the way through 3:20. God's wrath is going to be revealed. Who is it going to be revealed against? Well, he starts out by saying, those against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. And we automatically think that he's talking about the gospel or the truth of God's word there. But that's not what he's talking about. Let's look at the context. Remember, we're talking about what truth is it that men suppress by their wickedness and godlessness. Since what may be known about God. And I'm going to suggest to you that that is synonymous with the phrase or the word, the truth. the truth and what may be known about God are one and the same. Watch it. Here's why God's wrath is going to be revealed. Because what may be known about God is plain to them. Because God made it plain to them. Now stop right there just a minute. Has everybody that's ever lived had God's word? Let's ask it another way. Are there people who are dying today who don't know anything about the gospel? Yes. So, has God made the gospel plain to everybody? Has everybody had access to the Bible and the gospel and know about Jesus Christ and the cross and so forth? No. Not everybody knows the good news, do they? And so, at least entertain the thought that maybe that's not what he's talking about. Maybe he's not, when he says that these men that God's going to reveal his wrath on, that maybe he's not talking about that they suppress the gospel by their godlessness and wickedness. Maybe there's another truth that they suppress by their godlessness and wickedness. He says, this truth is plain to them. For since the creation, and he's going to tell you how God made this truth plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, he tells you a couple of them, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen. Since when? Since the creation of the world. There are some qualities about God. There are God's holiness or his righteousness, his eternal power and divinity have been made known. They've been clearly seen. How have they been clearly seen? Because God himself has showed it to them. And when did this start? Again? From the creation of the world. Being understood, this truth, whatever this truth is he's talking about, being understood from what has been made. Stop just a minute. What truth has God made plain to men since the creation of the world that some have suppressed because of their wickedness? What truth? That there is a God. That's the truth that he's talking about here. Does nature say there is a God? It does. Being clearly understood, he said, by the things that are made. What things that are made? Well, the stars, the trees, the grass, animals, your body. Yeah, all of nature says what? There is a God, right? So much so that the psalmist said, the fool has said in his heart, what? There is no God. Why? Why would he say that it would be a foolish person who would say there's no God? Because it's everywhere around you, isn't it? And you know, one of the interesting things, if you're going to talk to a person who's not sure that there's a God, and by the way, if your young person comes up to you one day and says, you know, I don't want to hurt your feelings or anything, but I'm not sure that there is a God. Don't be shocked if that happens. In fact, whether they tell you that or not, they got to go through that process for themselves to find out if there is a God. And so you just had a door open to you. Now, where would you go if you wanted to give someone evidence that there's a God? Where would you go? Would you go to Matthew? Where would you go? Go outside. Really? Pardon? You can take your Bible. That'd be called internal evidence. But the Bible doesn't prove that there's a God. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 says what? In the beginning, God. It presupposes God. You know that? Now, there is internal evidence, particularly for the divinity of Jesus and so forth. But if you want to prove God exists, go out and talk about nature. Any of you know anything about nature that proves that there's a God? You don't have to give me a long story, but you know, any of you know anything about nature that proves that something more than a man did got all this going? It does. The swallows come to Capistrano, don't they? I mean, you can count on it. How? How do they know? You know anything about, I'm not going to say the birds and the bees. I'm not getting into that discussion. But do you know anything about bees? I grew up as a kid, and we had lots of beehives, up to sometimes 30, 35 beehives. And so all summer long as a teenage boy, I'd work bees and honey. And so I learned a lot about bees. Sometime I might spend a whole lesson talking to you about bees because it's really fascinating. And when you learn some things about bees, you just know. The more you know about them, I mean, this is a little insect, you know, little, just one little bitty. What percent of God's creation would a bee be? You know, I mean, so small, so infinitesimal that we wouldn't even know how to put a figure to it. But it's incredible about bees. You know, and I could just start telling you some things about bees that are really, really, really fascinating. And what did man have to do with putting that in that bee? Why can you take one dog, and I'm country boy, hunted fish, so forth. Why can you take one dog, this little pup about that big, and you can take a quail feather and tie it on the end of a pole on a string and dangle it in front of this little pup about that big, and his body locks up, and he freezes on point, and he's just sitting there trembling, and he doesn't have a clue what just happened to him. Why would that dog point when you would put it in front of another dog, and he would totally ignore it, or he would jump out and eat it, or whatever, something, he'd have a totally different reaction? How did that get in that little pup? Did man have anything to do with that? No, but it's incredible. And it probably doesn't affect you this way, but it nearly makes me want to cry. When I see that little pup that you're training a little pup to point birds, and he doesn't have a clue why he's doing this, but a smell hits his nostrils and his body locks up. And he's just sitting there trembling, not knowing what in the world is going on with him. Little baby. What you had, you know, I won't ask what you had to do with this. You had a little something. Somebody had a little something to do with it, but it wasn't anything about creating. God's the one that created, right? Look at your hand. Look at the eyeball. Look at the human eyeball. When you woke up this morning, most of us saw in color. There's a few folks that are colorblind. Got some friends that are, but most of us saw in color. Don't quit being amazed by that. It's incredible. And God did it, didn't he? And this body, there's no machine that even comes close to this body, is it? I mean, this dude repairs itself most of the time, doesn't it? It's got these incredible things built in, Sam. That's exactly right. And let me say this. This is a little whatever on my part. One of the reasons, this opinion, one of the reasons that our families, our country is in the shape as it's in is because we spend too much time indoors watching news and not some time out in nature talking to our children about how wonderful God is. You know, you've heard my story talking about the guy was in Russia, and this great big old guy was a hunter, and he wanted me to go hunting with him, and he couldn't speak any English and I couldn't speak but half a dozen Russian words, and the thought of taking a gun and going out somewhere with the Russian out in the middle of the woods nowhere, you know, kind of bothered my wife, and it bothered me a little bit. But anyway, we started talking about God, and I asked him if he believed there was a God, and he thought about it a little while, and he said, yes, I do. Now, you understand, he'd been taught his entire life. This guy he grew up under the communist system, being taught that the religion was the opiate of the people. And, you know, it was just idiots who believed in God. And, I mean, he had had that drilled in him since he was a child. They taught him that in school. His parents taught him that. And I asked him, you believe there's a God? He thought a little while, and he said, I do. And I said, well, what's your relationship? Do you have any kind of relationship with him? I'm talking to a translator. And he said, he thought a long time before he answered, and I thought he wasn't going to answer, and finally he said, well, I can't say I'm his friend, but I'm not his enemy. Well, the truth is, he was his enemy, you know. And so we talked about God and how you could know that there's a God. And you know what I talked to him about? I asked him what kind of hunting he liked to do, and he liked to do turkey hunting. So we talked about turkeys. We talked about birds. We talked about what if you'd gone out and cut down a tree, and he was talking about the age of the earth. What if you'd gone out and cut down a tree the first day of creation? Do you suppose there would have been rings in that tree? Huh? You suppose there would have been? You suppose if you dug down in the earth, there might have been some coal in the earth or diamonds in the earth? You see what I'm doing here? I'm saying, you know, if you go by natural, what we believe the natural process is that it takes to get coal in the earth or to get diamonds in the earth or to get oil in the earth or these kind of things, that it would have taken a long, 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 long time. And so we assume that, and that throws out, you know, lots and lots of time. We can stretch that time out. But did God create Adam as a little infant child, or did he create him as a full-grown man? Yeah, he did, didn't he? So if he could do that, he could probably create a world that looked like it was full-grown, wouldn't you assume? You know, and I'm content to make that assumption. I know some people are not, but I am, you know. Yeah. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Chicken. Thank you. Thank you. So we've settled that forevermore, haven't we? The wrath of God being revealed from heaven against people who have this evidence in front of them, and they choose to suppress that evidence by their wickedness. Now, what does that say? It says, now he started out, what's the first thing? The wrath of God is being revealed against people who do this. So what does that say to me? It says that God is going to hold man accountable for knowledge, not just that he acknowledges, but knowledge that was made available to him and how he dealt with that knowledge. Can every person who ever lived a sufficient age and mentality to be held accountable for their own actions, can everybody reason to the point that they should know that there is a God? Is there enough evidence that a person can know that? Yes or no? There is, isn't there? And it's just on and on and on. I mean, we've got all kind of illustrations. You know, I've done this and you things, and people, you know, it's been done so long till people think it's ineffective, but if you haven't heard it, it's not ineffective. I take my watch off and hold it up and say, hey, I got this story to tell you about this watch right here. Do you know where I got this watch? There was this factory that had all kind of machine parts in it, and they had an explosion in this factory one day, and I was walking around afterward helping clean up, and I found this watch. And you know how this watch came together? That this explosion put all these pieces of this watch together. And I wound this sucker up, and it keeps perfect time. Man, that is cool. Exactly right. That'd be real cool, wouldn't it? And so what would you think? What would you think of me if I stood up and you could look at me and believe that I was seriously telling you this story? What would you think of me? You'd think, okay, we need to start a preacher surge. Wouldn't you? And you'd be right. Right? And so, if something this basic and this simple, there are a lot more complex things in this world than this, aren't there? The human eyeball is a whole lot more complex than this thing is, isn't it? And if we believe that there's got to be somebody out there somewhere that designed this thing, it didn't just happen by accident, then how in the world could we swallow somebody telling us that this world happened by accident? Tell me that. And how could you become, you got to be really, really, really educated to believe that this happened by accident, don't you? God's wrath is being revealed from heaven against this godlessness, living as if there's no God, and wickedness of men who suppress this truth, because this truth that they suppress has been made plain to them. God Himself made it plain to them. Since the creation of the world, He did. And these things are clear. God's divine nature is clearly understood by the things that are made. Nature, the things that God made, says there is a supreme being. Now, let me ask you this question. Can you know the gospel from nature? Can you know about the cross? Can you know about Jesus? No, you can't. And so nature is not sufficient. Somebody who worships nature, you know, they took one step toward at least acknowledging that there's a supreme being, but they fell far, far short. You start out the Ten Commandments, and God said what? Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything in heaven above, earth beneath, the deep, anywhere. Don't make any image. Don't bow down to any image. Why? Why? Because even though the things that God made declare that there is a God, they don't adequately represent God. They are not God. Nature is not God. And when we say, don't fool with Mother Nature, we are implying that she's the one that's the creator. No, she's not the creator. God's the creator. Is the designer or the thing designed the greater? The designer is, right? And so, as incredible as nature is, and as much as it tells us, it's not to be worshipped. Maybe we really need to hear that in this green world that we live in, and people are really getting obsessed and trying to make religion this world. It's a good thing to take care of this world. God has made us stewards of this world, and we owe an obligation to take care of the things that God's done, but that's not our religion. Folks, let's get that plain, because we've got lots of people who are joining in to make the biggest thing going today is taking care of this planet. And that becomes the hue and cry of religion today. Falling far, far short. So he says, so that men, he ends this up in verse 20, so that men are without excuse. They're without excuse about what? Knowing that there is a God. This truth that men suppressed. Not the gospel, but this truth that there is a supreme being somewhere who's much more than man. You know, it's been in the news recently here that we're discovering a lot more about our solar system, right? And if this old world stands for about 10,000 more years, you know what they're still going to be discovering? Some more of this solar system out there, isn't it? Now, is anybody going to say that man went out there and put those stars and stuff in place out there? Did man have anything to do with that? Nope. You know, our Hubble telescope is a pretty incredible thing, but it's just far as it can go. There's still more stuff out there, isn't it? Still more. What does that say? Man, somewhere there is this being that is incredibly powerful. And he's really organized, too, isn't he? He's real organized. And he must kind of like beauty, doesn't he? Because there's some incredibly beautiful things on this earth and out there in space, isn't it? Incredibly beautiful things. And so God's wrath is going to be revealed against people who have this kind of knowledge available to them, and they suppress this knowledge. Now, how do they go about suppressing this knowledge? Well, let's pick up in verse 21. For although they knew God. Now, how'd they know God? God revealed himself to them. He himself created some things to make it known to man that there is a God. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. Let's start talking about how man departs from God. Okay, step number one. And this is kind of a shocker. Thanklessness. Thanklessness. That's where it all starts. It all starts with the attitude that I deserve all the good things that's happened to me. I'm smart, got myself educated, got a good job, making good money, got a good house, got a nice car, got this. Who do I thank for this? Me. I did it because I'm smart. I did it because I'm strong. I got where I got because I'm good looking. Well, you know, now you know, don't you? I got where I got because, you know what I found out in going to other places in the world, and there are other people here, maybe most of you can attest to this. There are people in third world countries who have almost nothing that are smarter than I am. They may not have had the opportunities. They haven't had the opportunities to learn that I've had, but they're smarter than I am. And some of them, we think of being backward people. I mean, some of these backward people speak seven languages. And that was kind of a shock to me, because when I first started going to some of these countries back years ago, there were people who would tell me, say, now, hey, when you teach, you got to teach about a third or fourth grade level. Those people, they're not where, I'm not where I am because I'm smarter than they are. I'm where I am because God gave me some physical blessings and some opportunities that they haven't had. And that's the only reason. Because a lot of those folks, if they'd had the opportunities I've had, they would have done a lot more with it than I've done with it. You know, we see these students that come over from Asia, and people talk about how smart they are. It's not that they're that much smarter. It's that they're that much more serious about education. They didn't come over here to play. They came over here to get an education, because when they go back, they not only, people are not going to be impressed with their grades. They're going to be impressed that they know how to do something. And so they're not just trying to get a grade, they're trying to understand it. And so what I'm saying is, those people are not where they are, and I'm not where I am because I'm smarter than they are. Because there are some folks over there a lot smarter and a lot better looking and a lot faster and a lot whatever else you want to say. Although they knew God, they needed to glorify Him God as God and gave thanks to Him. You know what I need to be doing every day? I need to be on my knees thanking God that I live in the country that I live in. I had nothing to do with where I was born, and neither did you. And God blessed me to be born in a family, in a place, in a time, when I've been incredibly blessed physically. But even more than that, I've been incredibly blessed spiritually. And you know what? It wasn't my doing that I got the gospel taught to me. It was God's doing. And He didn't owe it to me. We're going to talk about that a little later. He didn't owe it to me. He doesn't owe it to anybody. Because He created you in a perfect relationship with Himself, and you chose to break that relationship. So He didn't owe you anything after that. It's by His mercy and His grace that I even ever got a chance to hear the gospel. And so I can't even claim that. It's all by His grace and His mercy. If you don't teach your children to be thankful, you're setting them up for a life of failure and heartache. Being thankful for what you have, saying thank you, is not unimportant. It is incredibly important. And parents, you need to be teaching your children to say thank you. Because departing from God starts with being thankless and thinking, I got where I got and I am what I am because of me. No, no. It's because of God. And we need to be thanking God every single day. And it is that awareness, and it is that thanking God is one of those nuts and bolts things that keeps us close to God. You know that? Acknowledging God is really, really important. Thanking God for what He's done It keeps me close to God. It keeps me reminded of where everything that I have came from. And that's the basis of my relationship to God. Is that He's the giver of all good gifts. And it's not me. And what did He tell Israel? He said, listen, when you go into that land, don't think that these good things that are about to happen to you are because you're better or bigger or stronger or smarter or anything else than anybody else. In fact, you're the weakest and the smallest among the nations. And I want you to always remember that. And the good things that have happened, that will happen to you in your life are because I chose to give you those things. And the day that you forget that, you're going to start leaving me. And you're going to ultimately depart and you're going to worship other gods. Now, folks, we live in a nation that worships other gods. And it really, you know, to pick up a phrase, we live in a nation that serves lesser gods. And they take all kind of forms. But our relationship to God starts with being thankful. And departure from God starts with being thankless. And it's really not unimportant. It's really important that you thank God. And so today, one of the ways, if you're not happy with your relationship to God and you feel like that there's something lacking, here's where you start. This is a nuts and bolts thing, okay? This is where you start. You make it a habit of regularly, through your day, when something good happens to you, thank God. When you make a trip and you come home, we always pray God to give us a safe trip where we're going. We get back, and you know what we never do? We never take the time to stop and say, God, thank you for giving me a safe trip. Why don't we do that? I mean, we ask Him all these things. Why don't we thank Him when He does it? Don't you like to be thanked whenever you do something for somebody? And if somebody never thanks you, do you get tired of doing something for somebody? But you know, there's something about somebody thanking you that energizes you to even do more, isn't it? If they're truly grateful. So we'll stop right there and we'll continue with our progressive departure, sequential departure from God next week. Thank you. God bless you.